Investors Chronicle.
Welcome to the IC Interviews. I'm Lenore Walters, and joining me today is Sam Kosh, manager of the European Assets Trust since 2011. This investment trust invests in smaller companies, an area you associate with growth, but aims to pay total annual dividends worth 6% of its net assets value at the end of the previous year. Sam, European Assets Trust is increasing its total dividend for 2021 by 14% relative to what it paid in 2020. What enabled the increase in the trust's net asset value so that it could do this?
European Assets Trust is an investment trust that invests in European small and mid-cap stocks. But we pay out 6% of the year-end NAV to shareholders, which is distributed quarterly. And yeah, last year was a good year for the trust. We grew the NAV nicely by almost 22% in sterling terms. So that allowed us to increase the dividend. What drove that? Well, I think really we made some good decisions during the height of the COVID crisis. We took a bit of risk out of the portfolio at the beginning of the year, but as the crisis hit in March 2020, markets fell quickly. But that allowed us to take advantage of some excellent prices on some really good high quality businesses, which had been sitting on our watch list for a while. We bought a number of them and they sort of powered performance through the year, which allowed us to deliver a good return ahead of the benchmark and deliver that increase in dividend.
Okay. I mean, what would be one or two examples of these companies?
Two that spring to mind. The first one is a company called MIPS, which is a Swedish we call it a technology business, but what really it does is it designs inlays for helmets. And these inlays help during a crash produce rotational motion, which improves the outcome of a crash, so you're less likely to be injured. And this company is penetrating its end markets. It sells the technology to helmet designers who embed it in their helmets. It allows the helmet designers to sell a safer product at a higher price. And this has really penetrated the cycling market. So if you go into a cycle shop, look for the yellow dot because it helps save lives. But it's increasingly penetrating other markets, and that fell quickly. We bought it at a really attractive valuation, and that has gone up, in fact, multiple times since we bought it. Another good example is Nordic Semiconductor, which is a business like MIPS, actually, that we'd met the year before. We'd felt it was a bit expensive when we first met it, but the shares halved in March and April, and we bought a position, and the shares have done very well. And that's the global leader in the design of low-power Bluetooth chips, which has, of course, benefited from the increase in connected devices, which has accelerated during the crisis.
Returning to your dividend, how much of a payment did you make from dividends of companies you hold, and how much by drawing on the trust's capital?
Well, last year was a bit unusual in that regard, in that the pandemic affected a lot of dividend payouts as companies conserved their capital and decided not to pay out as much as usual. So actually only 9% of the dividend last year was funded by income. The prior year, it was about 37%, which is a more normal amount. But what our shareholders and people need to understand and is that the dividend is funded by a combination of capital and income. We like to invest in quality growth businesses who are more likely to reinvest capital into their companies to grow. So actually, the payout in the portfolio is less than the benchmark. More than half of it is usually funded by capital.
And how large is your distributable capital reserve at the moment?
Yeah, it's very big. I had to ask our company secretary for this answer, and it's £336 million.
Now, because you can draw on capital, when you're selecting stocks for the fund's portfolio, how much emphasis do you place on their income credentials and how much on their growth credentials?
We are, our philosophy is we like good quality growth businesses. The good quality growth businesses for us are companies that can generate high returns on capital and can compound those returns for many years, creating a lot of value. So really, if they can reinvest the capital back into their businesses and get a good return, we like that. But if they can't and they want to distribute it to us as dividends or share buybacks, we're very happy with that. So we trust the management that we invest in to make sensible decisions with capital. They are more likely, because we invest in growth businesses, to reinvest it to grow and not pay out as much to us as shareholders. And actually, you know, we don't search for income generating businesses. We search for good businesses first that we can buy at acceptable prices.
And I suppose maybe this is touching very much on the same, but when you're thinking about the trust's returns rather than, you know, selecting stocks, is your focus more on growth because you can draw from capital, or are you more interested in, let's say, generating an income?
No, we're more interested in long-term growth of capital. And, you know, the theory behind the 6% year-end payout is that the stock market over a long time can generate around about 6% returns. We think we can beat that over the long term, and we have done. So we think we can grow our NAV, reduce the total cost ratio for our shareholders, and deliver a 6% income to our shareholders. So we are delivering growth and income at an attractive cost within an attractive market to our shareholders.
And do you expect to be able to increase the dividend in 2022?
We hope so. Up until the end of last month, our total NAV return was 17%, it was over 17% in sterling terms. We've got a little less than 2 months to go, so who knows what can happen, but actually this month has started strongly. So yes, we expect to be delivering an increase in dividend to our shareholders next year, with the caveat that, you know, stock market can be volatile and we have 2 months left of the year.
Now, when you're selecting stocks, I mean, what's your process for, I guess, honing in the ones you want? And have you changed it in any way as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic?
No, so the pandemic hasn't changed how we do things. It did throw up some great opportunities, and it allowed us to execute on that philosophy and process quickly. But it hasn't changed the fundamentals of what we do. And those fundamentals are: we like good quality growth businesses. We think that good quality businesses can generate high returns for a very long time, and far longer than the market assumes. You know, the market assumes that returns will get competed away. Well, actually, great businesses, that really doesn't happen, certainly for a long time frame. So once we start with that philosophy, then we, you know, move on to where we find these companies. And, you know, we don't mind where we find them. It's just important to find those sorts of businesses. So we will do screening. We will regularly meet companies on road shows. We'll look at competitors of businesses we own. And in fact, we're happy to look at competitors' portfolios as well for ideas. But, you know, that process hasn't changed during COVID. The opportunities thrown up were really attractive, and we took advantage of them to deliver some good performance over the last couple of years.
Okay, and what market and economic environments does your investment approach work best in?
Yeah, so look, we would expect to outperform through a market cycle, but we are aware that maybe there are certain environments where it would be a bit harder for us. So when you get cyclicals and value spiking, you get a big rotation there, then, you know, we tend to lag behind the market there. But in our experience, those are short, sharp and painful rallies and don't tend to endure. we have a long-term time frame. We believe over that long-term time frame, the philosophy and process will deliver returns above the benchmark. We will grow our NAV, deliver the income that our shareholders want, and that is what we've done in the past.
Now, at the end of September, your largest holdings included an airline. How has it been affected by the pandemic, and why do you hold it in view of the uncertainty over the travel industry due to the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, clearly this has been a massively challenging environment for Wizz Air. You know, we all know that travel has been decimated, but actually this has been a really good crisis for Wizz Air. They've got amongst the lowest cost structure in the industry, the best liquidity, the best balance sheet, and their competitors are really having serious problems because they've got historic high cost structures. A lot of them have had to rely on bailouts from their governments. And it means actually that Wizz Air has used the crisis well. They've gone and built up their network. They've made much better deals with airports. In fact, they've got deals with airports who previously wouldn't have dealt with them. And also they've signed some great deals with the aircraft suppliers. So they're going to come out of this with a better cost structure still, a bigger network against a competitor group that have really struggled. So actually, this company is in great shape, and we think over the next 5 years, you know, the growth is going to be fantastic. I should say also, part of the attractions of this business is that it's has a large proportion of its consumer base are in Eastern Europe. The propensity to fly is far less there than in mature Europe, but it is growing. So there's a really nice tailwind supporting that growth. So yes, it's been tough, but this company has really used the crisis well.
Which other of your holdings have been affected by the pandemic, and what are you doing about them?
Most of the holdings have been affected in one way or another. And, you know, you've had to take a critical eye on them. You know, the weaker business models have struggled through the crisis, and there's been a real acceleration towards the good business models. The ones that we found difficult are the sort of the good business models that have been in the eye of the storm. You've highlighted Wizz Air, but that's done pretty well. But two other stocks that come to mind are, we own a company called CTS Eventum, which is a Europe's largest online ticketing company. And clearly with events, you know, being decimated as well, you know, they've had a really tough time, and, you know, their sales have been absolutely poleaxed by the crisis. But again, they've got good liquidity. They've always had a strong balance sheet, and we think they will come out of this stronger. Another good example is Mar, which is a Italian food distributor. And they sell into the, you know, hotel, restaurants, catering space. Again, another area that's been hit hard. But their balance sheet's been strong. Their competitors have been hit worse. And what I would expect for this company is actually them to use their balance sheet to pick up some small acquisitions to build their market position coming out of that. And you'll notice from Wizz, CTS and Mar, I've all said they've had strong balance sheets. And if you look at the portfolio in aggregate, the portfolio has much stronger balance sheets than the market. So that while it's been a difficult time for a lot of companies, actually, if you've got the liquidity, you've got the balance sheet, that will get you through, and you could use it to improve your market position coming out of the crisis.
Okay. Now, have you recently sold any stocks, as a result of the pandemic or for any other reason?
Yeah, so we haven't, you know, portfolio turnover was high last year, but that was really about adding those new positions, and we geared the portfolio slightly. The sales of, you know, we sell companies when the investment case doesn't work or when the valuation just gets too expensive. And I've got an example of one of each of them. So Remy Contro, fantastic company, a unique asset in the cognac market. Again, that's another one we bought during the crisis, actually, where the valuation reached levels that we felt only accounted for the stock of cognac that they held. And the beauty of cognac is that it, as it ages, it increases in value. So we felt we had a really lovely margin of safety there. We bought it and the shares have more than doubled since. And it's reached levels now where actually we felt it was just too expensive, in combination with some concerns over one of their main growth markets, where China is a fantastic growth market for them. But we've seen a more interventionist Chinese government, and we know they've cracked down on certain areas, and they've cracked down, for example, on historically on officials gifting expensive luxury products. So we're a bit concerned that that might happen. So it's really the valuation combined with a slightly different outlook that's allowed us to sell that. A company sold where actually the investment case has deteriorated is Just Eat Takeaway. So we've owned this stock for quite a long time when it was just takeaway.com, when they were the leading food platform in takeaway platform in the Netherlands. Fantastic business there. They branched out into Germany by buying the Delivery Hero assets. And at that point, they had this dominated both markets. But what's happened since is actually they've bought into the UK and into the US. And at the same time, they're seeing more competition for the delivery side of the business. And there seems to be a lot of free capital in this area. So we think competition is getting much more intense. While we believe Just Eat Takeaway probably over long term is going to win out, it's going to cost a lot of money to do so. And I think they need to find a solution for the US business. So the investment case has deteriorated. So we sold out of that stock.
Okay. Now, you also said that some of your holdings had benefited from the pandemic. What would be examples of these, and why are you continuing to hold them, perhaps, if they've done well in the share price?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, look, there are some themes which sort of run through the portfolio, and that's digital transformation, health and well-being, sustainability, and emerging growth. And most of these have accelerated during the crisis. So, our tech stocks have done brilliantly. Our healthcare stocks have done brilliantly. But we don't think this is necessarily a acceleration which will then fall off again. Certainly in the digitalization world, we think the crisis has really accelerated that, and will continue to drive investments in that area. In healthcare, we've been a little bit more balanced. So if we looked at the performance last year, healthcare was a huge driver of our relative returns. And at the end of the year, we took a bit of money out of that area because we felt there were some companies that were looking a bit too expensive and which had maybe benefited disproportionately in one year from the crisis. So we took a bit of money out of that. But I think broadly, we believe these themes that have been accelerated, I think this acceleration is sustainable. So we're very happy to maintain exposure to these long-term growth trends of digital innovation, health and wellness, sustainability, and emerging growth.
What would be examples of stocks that you recently added to the portfolio?
I'll start with a lovely family-owned Belgium company called Lotus Bakeries, which is a company we've been following for quite a long time. But to be honest, the investor communication and the liquidity wasn't sufficient for us to make a investment. More recently, that's changed, and the family sold some of their capital, allowing us to enter the business at a low price. But why is it an interesting business? Well, this company owns the Biscoff brand, and Biscoff, a lot of people know the Biscoff biscuits. It's a fantastic brand. But what this company is doing is leveraging off that brand to expand. So They're selling Biscoff spread, Biscoff ice cream. And believe me, once you've tasted Biscoff ice cream, you will have a real appreciation of how much this company can grow. In fact, 24% of UK households have a Biscoff product. And we think they can replicate this success in the US, for example, where only, I think it's 4% of the households have a Biscoff product. So, you know, they've seen what Oreo and Nutella have done, and these guys can, we think, copy that with this unique product. But it's not only that that's driving growth. They also have another leg of growth with their natural food brands. They own the Naked and Bare brands. These are healthy snack products, which, again, we expect to take share through time. So a really great quality family business. And then I think another good example is we recently invested in Thule, which is is the frenetic way to say it. But these guys sell high quality ergonomic roof racks, boxes and carriers for transporting bikes and sports equipment. They have, you know, they're the market leader in terms of sort of share, but also quality of the product and brand, and their track record of growth is excellent. Of course, the trend for outdoor activities has accelerated during lockdown, and this has been a big driver of growth, but we expect this to continue. But one of the attractions for us is we think, you know, that's a great part of the business, but one of the real attractions for us is how they can replicate the success they've had with the sort of roof racks and roof boxes in other areas. And the area where they're making real strides is the active with kids segment, which includes things like bike trailers, child bike seats, and children's buggies, which is a market we think is ripe for them to attack with their, you know, high quality engineered ergonomic products and great brand. So yeah, so these are two consumer businesses with great brands that we expect to grow significantly over the next 10-15 years.
Okay, thank you, Sam. A really helpful update on European Assets Trust, an interesting insight into how you generate an income.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.